Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, Pope Benedict hosts the leaders of Chile and Argentina, marking the 25th anniversary of a Vatican-brokered peace deal between the two Latin American nations. In the next episode in our series, Vatican Centuries, we find out how papal power reached its zenith under Innocent III. And from truck drivers to street people, this Vatican office hits the road for the pastoral care of society's forgotten people. Vatican Saturday, a meeting between Pope Benedict XVI and the presidents of Argentina and Chile to mark the 25th anniversary of the signing of a Vatican-brokered peace accord between the two formerly hostile countries on November 29, 1984. The meeting follows Pope Benedict's 2007 pastoral visit to Brazil, where the pontiff called South America the continent of hope and love. It also comes on the heels of a recent landmark treaty endorsed by the two South American leaders, furthering the ties of friendship and cooperation between their nations. Just last month, Argentine President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and Chilean President Michelle Bachelet signed an historic integration and cooperation agreement, paving the way for collaboration in a vast range of fields: social security, economics, mining, public works, culture, armed forces, and even the construction of two tunnels across the Andes to facilitate road and train communications, trade, and interdependency. Well, speaking of stormy pre-1984 peace accord days, Argentina's President Kirchner told reporters last month that the ghosts of the past will be definitively gone with the signing of the new integration treaty. Chilean President Bachelet called the accord a historic milestone, the first treaty of its kind between two countries in Latin America. Advancing integration, she said, can only benefit our peoples and our countries. Chile's ambassador to the Holy See, Pablo Cabrera, calls Saturday's meeting in the Vatican an historic and remarkable one for the three entities the leaders represent.
Because they could represent the aim of peace and the materialization of peace through a channel of understanding, a channel of friendship, in which the aim of everybody was to build peace and security in the region. Nowadays, when the globalized world is very demanding for every person, every country, every human being to show peace and a recognition of peace, I think it could be taken as an example for all the international community, in particular for our Latin America region, which is very much engaged in a process of peace. That's why the visit of both presidents, Chile and Argentina, from my point of view, is a crucial moment to restore confidence that peace is always possible.
Well, if one could say that Caritas in Veritate maps out the Church's social doctrine and commitment to peace, how then does the ambassador envision the Holy See's role in the international community today?
It's very important to recognize that the Holy See is a very crucial and important partner within the international community. The Holy See has contributed to peace, security, and development ever since the Church exists. Therefore, today, we have to take into account that the contribution of the Church to peace, security, and friendship is quite remarkable in this case of Chile and Argentina. But as I said before, as a partner within the international or throughout the international organizations, the Holy See has strong stance to fraternity, to friendship, to security, to peace, and to global world, to have a better world. Caritas in Veritatis is a real peace for taking as an example to implement the design of the new world. The Pope has touched all the issues which are involved in this new design of the world, the necessity of the world to be together, to reach the goal of peace and security. Without ethic, a friendly ethic, the Pope has told us that we cannot maybe make it. That's why I think Caritas in Veritatis have to be followed in a very strong sense of fraternity, in a very strong sense of peace, and as a way to reach all those treasures that the community and the humankind needs today in this very demanding, globalized world. Therefore, Chile and Argentina are coming together to the Vatican, to meet the Pope, to share with him all those anxieties, desires, and wishes and necessities of both countries, and try to share with them the hope to have a better world, and as well to receive some ideas, new ideas, or proper ideas to enhance the unity of our region, which is Latin America. Latin America was called the continent of hope for the previous pope. And this pope, during Aparecida meeting of Bishop of Latin America, the pope said is the continent of hope and love. I think it's the continent of hope, love, and life. And I think the future of Latin America has very much in common with all these desires of the whole community to live in a world of fraternity, to live in a world of solidarity, in which solidarity is a key factor to reach the level of development, peace, and security.
But what brought the two Latin American countries to the brink of war over 25 years ago? And what role did the Vatican play in bringing about peace? Let's go back to those tempestuous times. It was the eve of Christmas 1978. The military junta of Argentina was planning an armed assault on Chile to assert Buenos Aires' claims in a maritime boundary dispute in the Beagle Channel. Argentina challenged Chile's juridical rights to three islands strategically located at the east end of the Beagle Channel. The Beagle Channel, the Straits of Magellan, and the Drake Passage are the only three waterways between the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean in the Southern Hemisphere. Alarmed by the prospect of all-out war between the two mostly Catholic nations, Pope John Paul II offered to mediate a peace deal between Buenos Aires and Santiago. He sent his personal envoy, Cardinal Antonio Samorey, to Buenos Aires. He persuaded Argentina to call off the military operation and accept the Vatican's mediation. Argentina's ambassador to the Holy See, Juan Pablo Cafiero, praised Pope John Paul's intervention, calling it generous and audacious. He told Vatican Radio that both countries remain grateful to him to this day. In neighboring Uruguay on January 9, 1979, Chile and Argentina signed the Act of Montevideo, formally requesting mediation by the Vatican and renouncing the use of force. But relations remained tense, and in 1982, both countries deployed their respective militaries to the border when Argentina went to war against the United Kingdom in the Falklands War. The tensions between Argentina and Chile did not ease until a democratic government took office in Argentina in December 1983. In November 1984, the new government called a referendum on the border issue. Some 80% of the Argentine electorate voted to accept a Vatican-mediated compromise. Days later, on 29th of November 1984, in Vatican City, Argentina and Chile signed the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, giving the islands to Chile but maritime rights to Argentina. It was a beginning of the end to decades of bad feeling between the two neighbors.
El Papa Juan Pablo II y reconstruir las relaciones de ambos países en este clima de confianza como el que se ha ido.
Ambassador Cafiero praised Pope John Paul for helping to reconstruct what he called a climate of confidence between the two countries. Relations have improved to such an extent that now, 25 years later, he explains, we have amplified the physical integration of our two nations via communications, commerce, and understanding. And we expect these relations, he says, to endure through mediation and dialogue. Well, while many will remember Pope John Paul II's role in helping bring about the fall of the Berlin Wall, less well known is the pontiff's success in averting this war between Chile and Argentina. In a letter sent in Pope Benedict's name to the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone recalled the anniversary of the 1984 peace accord. He described the peace process as an admirable example of building peace by the principle and ever-relevant method of dialogue, which aims, he says, not at the supremacy of power or interest, but at affirming impartial justice, the sure and stable foundation for coexistence among peoples. Now we delve deep into the history of the Roman Catholic Church. Today we present episode 19 in Jill Bevilacqua's series Vatican Centuries to find out how Innocent III consolidated the power of the Pope.
Chapter 19, The Power and the Glory.
With the continuing growth of the towns, the pattern of life in the late 12th century and early 13th was gradually changing from rural to urban.
A result of this was the development of new religious needs. The urban communities had little or no contact with religion until the arrival of the friars.
With Francis of Assisi and Dominic of Spain, the ideal of Christian poverty and the value of itinerant preachers was recognized by the popes, who saw, in contrast to this, the growing wealth and materialism of the clergy. It was the force of the friars' example that staved off, at least temporarily, schism and secession in the church.
As the bureaucracies of the emergent European nation-states became more complex, another need arose, that for experts in law and administration. And to the throne of Peter came just such a man in Innocent III, first of the lawyer popes. And it was in his pontificate that the temporal power of the papacy touched its zenith.
No sooner had Innocent III taken up residence in the Lateran than he began to put the place in order.
He threw out the money changers who had set up business in a passage near the palace kitchen and sacked most of the porters and janitors who refused to admit anyone to the Pope's presence until they had been tipped.
he set out to raise the standard of the Curia and reform the chancery, introducing a fixed scale of fees to combat corruption.
He organized the scriptores as a college, established a controlling office for letters of justice, and regulated the position of the proctors.
3 times a week, he held sittings to judge the various cases which came to him from all parts of the world.
It was said of Innocent III that he came nearest of all the popes towards realizing the theory of papal theocracy held by Nicholas I and Gregory VII. His declaration on empire and papacy is celebrated.
The creator of the universe set up 2 great luminaries in the firmament of heaven, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. In the same way, for the firmament of the universal church, which is spoken of as heaven, he appointed 2 great dignities. The greater to bear rule over souls, those being, as it were, days. The lesser to bear rule over bodies, those being, as it were, nights. These dignities are the pontifical authority and the royal power. Furthermore, the moon derives her light from the sun and is in truth inferior to the sun in both size and quality, in position as well as effect. In the same way, the royal power derives its dignity from the pontifical authority. And the more closely it cleaves to the sphere of that authority, the less is the light with which it is adorned. The further it is removed, the more it increases in splendor.
The most significant single papal event of the time was probably the Fourth Lateran Council, called by Innocent III in November 1215, shortly before his death. Representatives of the spiritual and temporal powers of the whole of Europe and of the Near East were present. There were over 400 bishops and archbishops, and 800 abbots and prelates. St. Francis of Assisi, we're told, was also there. The aims of the council were reform of the church and recovery of the Holy Land from the infidels.
Deploring the scandals dishonoring Christ's flock, Innocent recalled Ezekiel's vision of God, his patience exhausted, crying out to the 6 guardians of the city to destroy it. The Pope addressed the Council Fathers in these words.
And who are the 6 men charged with the divine vengeance? They are you, Fathers of the Council, who with all the arms at your disposal, excommunication, depositions, suspension and interdict, shall smite without pity those unmarked with the atoning cross who persist in dishonoring the city of Christendom.
The Fourth Lateran Council condemned the errors of heretics and strengthened the decrees against them, ordered the setting up of theology schools for priests, clarified the meaning of transubstantiation, instituted the rule of annual confession and communion at Easter, and passed measures to curb the greed of the Roman prelates.
Innocent III rebuilt both the Vatican and Lateran palaces, repaired the walls and roof of the Lateran baptistry, and strengthened with buttresses the walls of the church itself. He also built a tower, the Tor dei Conti, in the Forum area, as a fortification for policing the routes of the papal processions.
The religious life of the 13th century can be said to have survived thanks to the personality and work of 2 men. Francis of Assisi and Dominic of Spain. Of the Dominicans, it has been said that they provided the intellect and the Franciscans the instinct, which led both movements to universal success.
In the year 1206, 2 apparently unconnected events took place. In the ruined church of San Damiano, Francis of Assisi heard the figure on the crucifix telling him, "Go, repair my house, which is falling in ruins." And in faraway Montpellier, Dominic of Spain, returning from Rome with his bishop, met 3 Cistercian abbots who'd been sent by Innocent III to combat the Albigensian heresy.
In that year, decisive for both men, Francis renounced his father and all worldly goods to live according to the form of the Holy Gospel. Dominic saw the Cistercians fail in their mission, for while they surrounded themselves with pomp and splendour, the heretics lived in poverty. So Dominic recruited a few priests, and travelling barefoot and practising rigid penance, the friar-preacher took over the cause.
12 years later, Francis and Dominic met in a Roman street. Dominic had had a dream in which he saw himself presented by the Virgin to our Lord, accompanied by a stranger, who, like himself, was charged with converting the world. When he saw Francis in Rome, Dominic recognized the man of his dream. "Let us be comrades," he said, embracing him, "and nothing on earth can prevail against us." And so it was to be.
At that time, Dominic was the leader of only a handful of preachers, while Francis was the reluctant head of a movement which had already spread to almost every country in Western Europe. The universal appeal of the Franciscans evoked an earlier and much more rapid expansion. But once the special emphasis on converting the Albigensians was abandoned, the centre of Dominican life shifted to the universities, and after the first general chapter at Bologna in 1220, the movement was triumphantly established.
Both orders insisted on poverty, but whereas for Francis it was the end towards which he directed all his effort, for Dominic it was only a channel of communication, with preaching as the main task.
At a second meeting, Dominic suggested to Francis that they join forces, but Francis resisted. Dominic was a born organizer, and the loose Franciscan structure disturbed him. But he loved Francis, and when they separated, asked for his cord as a souvenir, saying to those around him, "I tell you truthfully, there is not a religious who would not profit from following in the footsteps of so holy a man."
Both saints refused the proposal by their friend Cardinal Ugolino, later Gregory IX, that bishops should be chosen from among the friars. But once they were dead, the saints' wishes were disregarded, and Franciscans and Dominicans alike became bishops.
Well, tune in again next Saturday for Chapter 20 of Jill Bevilacqua's continuing series, Vatican Centuries. Don't miss it. It's the Vatican Office for the Pastoral Care of Migrants, but it's also responsible for truck drivers and commuters, the homeless, and those forced into prostitution.
Lorry drivers, railway workers, and the development of better road ethics lead to improved road safety, the liberation of women of the street, the care of street children, and finally, those who are homeless.
Archbishop Agostino Marchetto is Secretary of the Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People. He says that, though apparently these people don't have much in common, they do share one thing, the road or the street, and some of them end up there because they are among society's weakest and most vulnerable. But the Church is reaching out to them in ever-expanding ways.
We must remember each person is precious in the eyes of God and valuable to Him. Clearly, the needs of those who find themselves on the road street are far-reaching. Some of them are material and human, psychological and also spiritual. Some are crying out for help. Others are simply searching for a meaning and a synthesis to their lives. In this respect, I am thinking of the difference between those who work in long-distance lorry driving compared with the plight of the woman trafficked for prostitution.
Most of us depend on the road to get to work. For others, it represents their very livelihood. But for many, it can also be the means to an unexpected end. In the year 2008, 43,000 people died in traffic accidents, and 1.7 million others were injured in Europe alone.
not only in each incident tragic in the loss of life, but it deprives families of fathers, mothers, children, not to speak of economic and social damages. We should not forget that today 44% of goods in Europe are transported by road, bringing its own large constituency of lorry drivers with their own specific needs. Today, the problem of prostitution in the continent is suddenly escalating as the demand grows, with annually thousands of women, many who are trafficked, caught in a downward spiral from which they are unable to release themselves.
Even more vulnerable to trafficking are the some 250,000 children believed to be on Europe's streets, together with nearly 3 million homeless. Through its own institutions and pastoral initiatives and its partnerships with other agencies, the Church works to defend the rights of long-haul drivers, to promote responsible driving ethics, and to remove and care for those who've made the streets their home.
We need continually to be aware of our need to collaborate and work together when and where possible. Above all, our unique contribution must be, in the words of Pope Benedict in his recent encyclical Caritas in Veritate, to have a mission of truth to accomplish in every time and circumstances for a society that is attuned to man, to his dignity, to his vocation.
Archbishop Agostino Marchetto is secretary for the Pontifical Council for Migrants and Itinerants. Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.